Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, author of the Couple Speak series of self-help books and a psychotherapist at the Couple Center in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live each month on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, in tonight's 45-minute episode, How Noticing Can Change Your Life, I'll co-host with Cindy Giovagnoli, a photographer and writer who believes in curiosity, enthusiasm, meditation, and mistakes, and who shares her delight in people, experiences, and lessons through her writing and images, as well as through workshops and retreats focused on developing the art of noticing, as she puts it, in our lives. Cindy will help give listeners an understanding of what real noticing is, how it can be practiced, and how that practice can be a transformative force for more centeredness, calm, presence, and joy. Now, Cindy is currently practicing noticing herself in a grand adventure many of us would be jealous of with her husband and her fluffy rescue dog in, believe this, an 83-square-foot camper on the road. So she's into noticing everything around her. You can reach her directly, and I'll share this at the end of the show as well, at staycurious@cindygiovagnoli.com. And it's spelled CindyGiovagnoli.com. You can also find her online at her website, CindyGiovagnoli.com. Now, one technical point. If you've called into the live podcast at 877-497-9046, you can join us on the air with questions or comments by dialing 1 on your phone, and you'll be next in line to join us. Don't be shy. Please don't be shy. I always love a conversation, so don't think that any question or comment is a foolish one. We love to have it as interactive as possible. And if you cannot make the live podcast, tune in anytime afterward at blogtalkradio.com/Susan Lager. Well, hello, Cindy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so happy to have you. And one thing I would want our listeners to know is that I found you kind of by accident. I was directed by our son to a fabulous article about meditation, and then on to the art of noticing, and not realizing I was very struck by your writing and your wisdom, and I was all ready to sign up for your site. And then I noticed that you happen to have been our son's wedding photographer, which was really a surprise and a delight. So what a small world, right?
It is a small world. And I am, you know, I have a little bit of interest ADD, so I like to play around in a lot of different things.
Yes, that became obvious to me just by looking at your site that you're kind of a Renaissance woman. You're into a number of very creative endeavors. Now, I wonder if we could start by you defining noticing.
Sure, that would be great. So it's noticing. I think of it as really not just passing through the world around me or even through my own thoughts or emotions or stories, but actually seeing and looking and hearing and pausing and just actually drawing some attention to what's around me or what's within me. I really think of sort of noticing on an external and on an internal level, that external being, you know, as I'm driving home from work at the end of the day, seeing how beautiful the evening light is or how it plays through the trees on my drive home. I think of it as you know, when I come downstairs in the morning and, you know, when I had a downstairs and wasn't just in the camper, you know, the coffee and the coffee pot and how it filled my entire kitchen with that smell and how good and rich the coffee in my coffee cup in my hands feel. That's, you know, I think of those things as the external noticing, the really taking note of what's really around me. And then the internal being, how do those things make me feel? You know, when I realize that by grabbing that cup of coffee and holding it in my hands for just a few minutes in the morning, I have that simultaneous feeling of comfort and calm, kind of helps me start to feel energized for the day ahead of me. And when I know that it's important, right, to take a second and feel the coffee cup in my hand. I can feel that internally, and I notice that internally. It's also that internal notice of, you know, when you see that name in your inbox and you just feel that tensing up of, you know, the shoulders, the neck, and when you realize that, you realize that maybe I need to take special care in how I draw boundaries with that person or what part of my day, or, you know, maybe I should make sure that I've, like, had a nice cup of tea before I respond to that email, you know, and those mm-hmm. internal noticings and the external noticings. Does that make sense?
Yes. So it's not just about visual. It's about pausing, you're saying, and it's about not only pausing to take in the visual, but all your senses on an external level, your surroundings, but also checking in with yourself emotionally.
Right, absolutely. I mean, we lead such busy lives, and we are sort of trained by those busy lives to jump when our cell phones beep or jump when our email dings, or, you know, we're sort of unconsciously tuned in to things that have us running all the time. And so this noticing, I think, is right. It just gives us that moment, that passing, fleeting moment of pausing and seeing and what that adds to our lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very funny because you have approached it from the perspective of a photographer and a writer. And in my field of psychotherapy, you know, there's a whole new understanding about mindfulness, pausing and being present for the moment, being present for your life, not just rushing through life, and the advantages of that. So it's interesting how so many different fields are kind of dovetailing. I mean, this has been a central concept of Buddhist practice for many years, but it seems to all be coming together at this point. And I guess I'm wondering, how did you come, before we talk about the benefits of it, because there are vast benefits of it, I'm wondering if you could say something about, other than the obvious as a photographer, how you personally came to this practice.
Oh, yeah, of course. I think probably almost everyone can relate to this on some level. You know, I went to law school and then I decided actually to start a business as a photographer instead of practicing law. And I think what happened to me is what happens to a lot of people, whether it's when they have new babies or you get caught up in this pattern of, well, when I finish this paper or when I get done with finals or when I get this year's taxes done or when I edit this session or when. Well, then I'm going to get enough sleep. Then I'm going to start eating better. Then I'm going to begin running again or making time to go spend some time in the woods. I kept sort of, what's the word, bargaining with myself. Well, once I meet these certain goals, then I'll take care of myself and my relationships and my life again. And what happened for me was that I'm a cancer survivor, and I had a pretty significant cancer relapse. The combination of not taking care of myself, period, and the stress levels that I was experiencing literally did my body in. And so I was kind of forced to take a little bit more time in my days. You know, there's not a whole lot to, you know, argue with when you have to go sit in a waiting room or sit in chemo. And I found that when I was forced to slow down, I was also forced to have a little more space. And when I found that little bit of space, I began to notice a little more of all of those kinds of things. And, you know, I think it's one of those inevitabilities that comes with something like a cancer diagnosis, where you also do have this really strong urge to, I want to see that beautiful light in the evening. I'm really tuned into that because I just had kind of a little wake-up call. But as I did more of that noticing, I was paying a little more attention suddenly to my life, some really amazing things, I think, started to happen for me. And they weren't life-shattering. I didn't suddenly have fewer deadlines. I didn't have fewer things pulling on my time or my energy, especially considering that my energy levels were so low. But what happened was that the more I noticed, the more space I found in my life, and the more space I found, the more noticing I was doing, and that little cycle started to open things up for me. I started to see more ways of being creative. I started to see more ways of being productive. I started seeing more ways to care for my marriage and my relationships. It was a really subtle but truly life-changing sort of alteration to my schedule. Didn't look very different per se. I was certainly taking more time for things like sleep, but how I felt in that schedule was very, very different. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Well, you were more present for your life. You were slowing down and not racing through and giving perfunctory attention to things. It sounds like you were savoring, which is a question I have. I mean, savoring experiences more. And, there's a lot that we know about pausing and amplifying a moment of beauty or a moment of peace, and how that can literally create new neural pathways of happiness as we savor, rather than just drive past a field of hay and say, oh, that looks cute, noticing the play of light, the smell of the hay, the sweet grass, et cetera, amplifying experiences. And they know from a neurologic point of view, it makes people happier. I'm wondering if I am conflating two things, because it sounds like the way you use the term noticing, it is like a kind of savoring. It's staying with an experience and enjoying it, or paying attention to it, in a heightened way.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I almost think of it as like step one. You know, you can't savor something you didn't even notice was there. So
right.
It's literally, I'm so blown away, and I get as caught up in this as I think anyone else right now does, but we are so busy, and so we've got these blinders on to whatever's next on our to-do list, and we're just missing so much of our lives. And I think I'm not alone in sense sometimes of, where did my week go, or where did my month go? Or literally, there have been times where I've thought, where did this year go? I have no idea what happened to it. And that sense of just missing things, like, where did it go? I know I had a weekend, but I'm not sure where it went. That feeling of literally just being that disconnected from my life, that's, I think, the step one before you can savor is to start reconnecting, to start really actually seeing what is in your life, where you are, what's around you, who's around you, what are they saying?
Right, paying attention. And it sounds like you're saying, de-automating your life, because so much of our life is on automatic pilot. We drive a certain way. We have a conversation, we do the obligatory half-baked attention, but it sounds like it's about paying attention, pausing, and being fully in the moment for whatever it is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. You know, and it's,
now,
I think it's interesting
sorry.
We use this, oh, I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
No, no, you were saying something. I interrupted you.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that, you know, I think the term being in the moment is something we're hearing a lot right now. And I think for a lot of people, and sometimes myself included, I'm like, I don't even know what that means. What do you mean be in the moment? It's really, it's not a thing, right? It's quite literally that simple. Is when someone's speaking to you, you're listening to them. When you're driving, you're not. I found over the last few years, I'm increasingly like turning my radio off in the car because it feels distracting to me. I can't think and I can't notice necessarily as well if I'm like trying to drive and see and look and hear. And it's interesting how I only want to be doing really one thing at a time. Right now I'm driving and looking. And when I stop and listen, I'll do that. And it's so funny, this idea of being in the moment and how we have a million techniques for how to be in the moment when really it's literally that simple. Just be here.
Yes.
What are you doing right now? And just do it.
Right. I like your point also about how it is not congruent often with multitasking, because when you're multitasking, you're not giving your full attention to anything.
No. No, I have actually become maybe the queen of the anti-multitasking. I simply don't buy in anymore. I don't. I am.
Well, I think, yeah, people overvalue productivity and busyness. It's such a common complaint in my work with individuals and couples where we're too busy to do this, too busy to do that, too busy to experience. And it has become a common, sort of a plague on mankind and a defense against connection, a defense against being in touch with yourself and being in touch with other people. So part of what I really liked when I read your blog post about meditation and then found out about your noticing retreat is that you're right. It gives it, it's a nice frame because I agree with you. I think a lot of people don't know what is meant when people say mindfulness, but noticing is something everybody can relate to. You just look around you, you use your senses and look around you. So it feels to me like a very, very helpful frame. And I'm wondering, Cindy, if you could, before we go into the benefits of it, you know, some of which are obviously self-evident, if you could talk a little bit about some of the recommended tools and techniques and practices for it.
Okay, sure. So I think of three tools as being kind of the center. I think first is developing the seeing and really looking. So, you know, possibly because of my photography background, I think the perfect tool for that is a camera. And I don't mean a big fancy DSLR going into Photoshop. I don't mean any of that. I mean pulling out the phone that you have in your pocket all the time and looking around the room that you're in that moment and seeing the photo, just looking and seeing what's there. When I think of this as a teaching tool and as a tool for learning to notice, I actually personally feel very strongly about when you're using a camera as a tool and a practice for noticing, that these be photos that you commit to not sharing publicly. So this is not for your Instagram account. It's not to go on Facebook. That this is a photo that you're taking as a tool to see. And if that photo is beautiful, that's a great side perk. But the point is for a moment you saw something beautiful in your world and you took a moment to really look at it, and then you took a photo and then you have that for a second. And I think if I were going to really urge someone to use this tool and use this technique, I would think about maybe spending just 1 week and taking a single photo a day, committing to just taking one photo per day of your life for you and seeing what that looks like and seeing how at the end of the week, if you're seeing those moments any more frequently in your life, the way the light comes through your kitchen or the interesting way your kids left their breakfast mess on the table, if you can see vignettes in your life that strike you, you're noticing them. The next tool, the next technique I would...
Wait, before you go on to that, Cindy,
sure.
One thing I like about that is that it sounds like you encourage people to get away from the kind of canned experiences that so many of us are primed to do, like take a picture of the group all together at a dinner out, or take a picture of the baby's first steps, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you encourage people to notice the everyday things in their life.
Absolutely. And, you know, I hear this all the time from people. Well, I don't live in a beautiful home, or there's nothing photogenic in my life, which is totally wrong. And I don't say that lightly, because I rarely think people are completely wrong about almost anything. But we all live very beautiful lives, and I'm a firm believer in the beauty of the mundane, of the day-to-day. Our routines and the little lives that we lead are very important to us. And so there's real beauty to be had in our quiet, private moments and our quiet, private lives. And I think that's part of the practice, is seeing those things. And, you know, we live in a culture right now that is very attached to the Instagram moment or the social media moment. And we see everyone's perfect moments. We see their photoshopped lives. And, you know, as a photographer, I certainly can draw a lot of inspiration from those resources. But there comes a point, I think, in our lives when we need to stop thinking of the photographs we take as a public demonstration of
mm-hmm.
our perfect lives and allow ourselves to take snapshots that are for us. And you know, I say this, you know, taking a photo and using a camera, but I don't necessarily believe that this you have to actually take a photo. Just see the photo. You know, if putting a screen up between you and your moment creates a disconnect, then put the screen down. I want
mm-hmm.
a moment seen for you, and that there's real, you know, it's a struggle I have as a photographer. Sometimes I'll even be traveling, you know, somewhere in the world for work, and there are just moments that I don't want the barrier of a camera between me and what's happening around me. I just want to dive right in and be fully engaged. And that, you know, those are certainly, you know, things to consider. What I want, and the goal with that, using your camera as a tool, is merely to see the photo. You don't even have to take it. I just want,
okay.
I want that vignette and that moment of beauty to be noticed. And for you to,
okay.
to no longer think of your life as, you know, not photogenic, because there's something photogenic in almost every moment of our lives, even when we're in a fluorescently lit office. So
a mental photo, if not an actual physical photo.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because our son does this. He does physical photos all the time of the mundane things, that he'll look up at a staircase from the ground floor and notice the twisting of the stairs or the play of light on a ceiling or a bug.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at his photos and I'll realize he is really present for the moments of his life. I mean, this is stuff that, you know, I probably just bomb through life and don't even notice, because I'm always into accomplishing something. So it really is startling when you see it in action, and I can see how making it a practice would really train you to be more present for you, to appreciate what's around you and to appreciate the mundane. Now, when we talked, it sounded like you also encourage journaling, and I'm wondering if you could say something about that.
that is what I always think of as step two, is the, I think it was the notice what you notice. So I stumbled years ago across a book called Syllabus by a woman named Linda Berry. And this technique I have completely stolen from her. It's an amazing, it's a great, crazy book if you ever get a chance to check it out. Again, it's called Syllabus by Linda Berry. But she introduced to me this idea of what she calls the did, saw, heard, draw. And so the technique here is that you take a page in your journal and you divide it into four quadrants that are unequal. So if you think of it as kind of an upside down cross on the page, so the top two quadrants are larger than the bottom two quadrants. The top left is your did quadrant. So in that quadrant, you list off anywhere from 5 to 10 things that you did that day. In the right-hand quadrant, you list off 5 to 10 things that you saw that day. And on either of those two quadrants, you're not spending more than about 3 minutes. So this is a quick 10-minute practice, 10 minutes or less. In the bottom left quadrant, you write something that you heard or overheard or just something related to hearing that happened that day. And then in the bottom left quadrant, you do a quick doodle-type sketch, 30 seconds of just some moment from the day. And so the idea behind this practice is, you know, especially you'll see it when you do like the did quadrant or the saw quadrant. Your first 3 to 5 items are just, you're going to rattle them right off. I went to the grocery store. I went to school. I went to work. You know, whatever. They're going to be really obvious things. And then you're going to kind of start to struggle a little bit and think, oh my gosh, I don't know. What else did I do today? And as you really start thinking about what else you did that day, all of these smaller moments come back. These moments that, you know, didn't register as a major to-do for the day. They're just, you know, something small, fleeting, interesting, but you wouldn't have noticed them if you hadn't paused to really think about them. The same thing with the saw, something that you saw. And, you know, the heard, it's always interesting. Those last two quadrants, the heard and the draw, I find myself over and over again shocked by what pops into my head. And that beginning to, again, I'm totally overusing the word notice, but it's the right word. Noticing what random thing that you overheard pops into your head is just hysterical. And then what happens is when you're living life, after, you know, you've been doing this for a little while, you're out at the grocery store and you hear some hilarious thing that someone's child says one aisle over, and you think, oh my gosh, that's my herd for the day. And it registers. It registers in your regular life, but then it also gets solidified in the practice. So draw is part of what you were talking about earlier with like the neural pathways. There, she talks in the book Syllabus a little bit about how just that moment of thinking and focusing long enough to doodle a 30-second sketch of a moment from your day will really solidify that memory in a way that it wouldn't be solidified otherwise. It just gives it a certain tangibility that helps it sort of stay with you for sometimes the rest of your life. And so it's really, the idea behind this is that truly just to see what at the end of a given day stood out to you. And that, you know, like I said, the intention is for it to be a quick practice. It's supposed to be very intuitive. It's, the idea is to see what jumps out when you stop overthinking it and just allow things to come back up for you. And it just solidifies the day-to-day, you know, when you, like I said, when you've been practicing this for a little while, you start to kind of think a little bit in those terms, like, oh, that's my herd, or this is my moment to doodle later, or, you know, oh, I've got to add this to my spa list tonight. And, you know, there are times that I can't or don't do this every day. And so maybe I'll do it for the week or for the weekend. It's my favorite way to travel journal because, you know, when you're traveling, you don't want to spend your time writing out in longhand the paragraph recap of your whole travel experience for the day. You want to get on with your traveling. And so it's a great way to not lose those moments. And it's fascinating to go back over time and look at, you know, those old, especially, like I said, the dids and the saws. You get to that last 5 to 10 things, and they're moments that you would have lost if you hadn't just taken that 10 seconds to jot it down real quick. So it's really a practice to begin to notice what you notice, to really make note of what's coming in and really sticking from the day. Does that
make sense? Where is my attention going? And taking it away from moving you away from the larger, more obvious moments to the smaller, more mundane, everyday, subtle things in your life. It's interesting because it's a practice that I encourage couples to do in my work with couples when I will ask them about anything positive that has developed, because people often zone right in on the negative, but anything positive that has developed, I will ask them to not for the Hallmark moments or anything where there'd be a parade down Main Street, but subtle little exchanges, pulling their attention into the everyday, the mundane that they felt good about. I mean, it's kind of variation on this, but I could see using this practice to help people. They could not only do it in what I saw, what I heard, and then draw it, but the we, you know, they could take it into that. I like the fact that it takes it into the micro, it takes it away from the macro. I'm going to try that because it, you know, I think it's powerful.
Well, and again, you know, it's what you just said about like the big Hallmark moments and the marches down Main Street. We get really caught in that, don't we? Everything's supposed to have this like big impact, or, you know, this noticing, I want my life to change overnight. It's just, you know, and all of this noticing and the benefits that come from it, and what you were saying about the savoring and the neural pathways, I think for most people I know, these aren't major, you know, sexy changes. Like, we're not losing 50 pounds in 3 days, you know, like it's not one of those kinds of things. It's that real appreciation of the small moments in our daily lives and feeling more connected to those moments in our lives. It's, you know, we're not going to suddenly clear our deadlines and not be busy at all and just be able to like sit back and, you know, tomorrow I'm going to write that novel I've always dreamed of. It's suddenly being able to find a little space to write a few sentences of that novel I've always dreamed of, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's terrific.
Yeah.
Now, you also talked about when we were preparing the show, I'm wondering if you could say something about meditation as one of the practices that you encourage for noticing.
Absolutely. My favorite topic. So, you know, I have some strong feelings about meditation, mostly because meditation was really, really hard for me to get into. And, you know, the article that I wrote that you referred to earlier, I wrote specifically because I thought, had I known some of this way back when, I would have started this years ago. And so, you know, I think one of the first points that I think is important about meditation is that it doesn't have to look like what you picture as meditation. You do not have to be all blissed out on a cushion in like some kind of like gypsy outfit with like candles burning. Like that, I mean, if that works for you, then by all means, knock yourself out sitting in lotus on a cushion. That's great. I am happy for you because not in a million years can I get myself in lotus position. But That idea of intentionally being still for some period of time every day. So if you've got all the time in the world and you can sit for 3 hours every day, fantastic. Enjoy yourself. For most of us, if we can get somewhere in the 5 to 10 minute range, fine. If you get 3 minutes while you're waiting for your shower to heat up and you get 3 minutes when you're sitting in the carpool lane waiting for your kids to get out of school at the end of the day, take them. Take those minutes. 3 minutes is fine. Mm-hmm. Take what you can get. And so this is, and I, you know, I've had some, as I said the other day, some energetic conversations with people who are far more intense meditation experts than I am, for sure. But I personally feel that there is a value in that aspect of being still. And the reason that I think that that part is important is that I think when we sit still with real intention, I think things come up. And beginning to notice and see what those things are starts to help us tune in to the patterns in our lives, the stories that we tell ourselves, the ways that we either avoid or cope or whatever. And so once we start to notice them and we're aware of them, we can start to make decisions about them, right? So we can start to decide whether or not, I think the example I gave you the other day is I've noticed in myself as I've become more aware that when I'm really stressed, I like to try to pick fights with my husband, which as it turns out is a practice that does not serve my life. And so, you know, that awareness and that pause button that happens when you start to pay attention to how you're responding to things and what comes up when you take a second started to make me realize that I could feel myself inside kind of winding up to pick the fight. And I had just enough time to sort of think, is this really what I want to fight with my husband right now? Which, of course, the answer is no. Of course I don't want to actually fight with him.
Right.
And so that, I think, I think meditation is a huge part of the internal noticing. And I think when we talked the other day, I was saying that one of the big epiphany moments to me for coming to meditation was when someone finally told me that the point of meditation was not to empty my mind. That blew me out of the water. I couldn't, what do you mean? It's not about, all I ever pictured was having this like Zen empty brain sitting on this cushion, right? So
a lot of people have that misconception that they have to be in the state of bliss with an empty mind, and what they don't realize,
absolutely.
And it sounds like what was so transformative for you is realizing that meditation is really about being still, noticing the rise and fall of your breath, noticing your thoughts in a dispassionate way, trying to watch it come and go. So it
right.
sounds like it's a perfect vehicle for noticing, and noticing without judgment, or if you noticing the judgment, kind of separating from, your ego, taking your ego out of it. And it sounds like it's a very powerful tool. Now, Cindy, I hate, you know, I'd love to spend the rest of the time on meditation, but I'm noticing the time. We only have about 6 more minutes left. So I'm wondering, you know, you also have given retreats, and I take it now that you're on the road, that's on hold for now. You've given, one of the things I was attracted to was the art of noticing retreat. Is that something you can foresee doing again in the future?
Definitely.
A tool for people?
In the midst of developing an online class. So that's something I'm hoping to launch this fall at the earliest, and, you know, either this fall or this winter. And, you know, it's something that, as I sort of settle, we've only been on the road now for about a month. And so we're still in the midst of finding our bearings, but as I sort of settle into what this life is looking like, what I'm hoping is to start kind of teaming up with other educators around the country and developing something like the Art of Noticing or even just a workshop format around the country as we travel. So, no,
that's
this
great.
Is certainly not the end. It's actually, I hope, just the beginning of really getting some of this message out there, because it's not hard, you know. It just takes some intention, you know. It takes the commitment to asking yourself if the social currency that you get out of being busy all the time is really worth the feeling of disconnect and lack of control and general unhappiness that comes with running, running, running and never feeling like you're catching up.
Mm-hmm.
So just such an accessible and really, you know, I think sometimes it just really does take someone saying, hey, like, you got this. You can do this. Like, sit still, take some pictures, write a few things down on paper, and just look, listen, be.
So it certainly sounds like if people adopt a noticing practice in whatever way, using all or any of the tools, that they're less likely to arrive on their deathbed with regrets about what they missed. Where was I for my child's toddlerhood? Where was I for the pleasures and the joys of, you know, my neighbors or living where I did? It sounds like you are infinitely more likely to feel like you were fully present for your life, that you lived a full life. And, you know, I said something about how noticing obviously can set you up for savoring, staying within, amplifying experiences. But it sounds like, at least in your experience and the experience of people you know, that it creates not only more centeredness and calm, but more happiness, that you're paying attention to the small things in your life that have meaning if you allow them to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. You know, I love the fact that you approach it as a practice, not just, well, pay attention more often, but as a practice, so that you take yourself away from the things that society forces our attention on, the giant Hallmark macro moments, to little subtle, mundane, everyday things, and see what emerges.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. It's so consistent with where we're at in the psychotherapy world right now, being present for your life. I mean, it's all dovetailing, all of that stuff. Anyway, Cindy, unbelievably enough, I'm noticing the time, which is something I hate to notice on these programs. But we're going to have to wrap up, and I would like to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom about this. And I'd like to thank our listeners. We didn't have any actual – we have some callers, but they didn't dial in with questions. Again, shy people on the phone. but I want to thank you. And, you know, I just love your enthusiasm about this, and it's something that really rings true. Now, anybody who would like to learn more about this, I would say, would it be fair to invite people to contact you or your email address while you're in your 83-foot, square foot camper?
please reach out. I'd love to hear what people think, or if they disagree. I would love that. So thank you.
Okay. So you can be reached at your email address is staycurious@cindygiovagnoli.com, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's
okay.
It.
Okay. And I think anybody who goes to your website will probably have a similar experience that I did, that the last thing I realized was that you were a wedding photographer. you know, you seemed like a sage and a woman of the world and somebody who's filled with talent and a zest for life and a wonderful writer. And, oh, you happen to be a fantastic wedding photographer. That blew my mind. So I would encourage people to go to your site, CindyGiovagnoli.com, and to contact you through your email at staycurious@CindyGiovagnoli.com. My next episode will be on Wednesday, March 15th. Yes, it's March 15th at 2 p.m. And it's going to be in the middle of the day because I'm interviewing Carnage Buckley, who's a motivational and performance coach from Ireland. So we were trying to negotiate the time difference. I didn't want to have a show when all his listeners would be in the middle of the night sleeping. So it's going to be at 2 p.m. and he's going to be sharing his insights and tools for the 7 aspects of a problem-solving mindset. Very different subject. But that's something we're going to be talking about. So thank you again, Cindy. And
thank you.
I look forward to practicing, really integrating this practice into my life. Thank you so much again. And good night, everyone. Bye-bye.